you know, I guess technically we were on the property of Disney World, but at no time did it ever feel like we were at the most magical place on earth.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You weren't inside the park. You weren't getting the
Right.
full experience.
No.
All right, basketball fans, you know what time it is. This is the Business Casual Basketball Podcast, episode 123. So glad to be with you guys back on the mic here. Aaron Washington, your host, and I'm very pleased to announce the arrival of the one and only Jared Greenberg from NBA TV, as well as NBA on TNT, reporter, host for both of those platforms, those great networks. He's been doing a lot of fantastic work for many years. So Jared, so glad to have you on. I'm really looking forward to seeing your experience just from the broadcasting side. I'm sure there's a lot of viewers here, listeners, that are kind of interested to see how that works on the media side, just covering the NBA and some of your experiences in the bubble here. So thanks for offering your time this evening.
I appreciate it, Aaron. Anytime I get a chance to talk to somebody about the business and about hoops, I jump on it. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Jared, I'm very excited to hear your experience about being in the NBA bubble. A lot of us have kind of wondered what that experience is like, being on the front line, so to speak. You got to see that up close and personal, something that we may not ever see again in the, you know, in our lifetimes. And it's something really incredible. So to start off this conversation with you, I just wanted to ask you, what were your favorite parts about being down there? What were your least favorite parts? You know, how was the food? You know, was the service great? You know, I've been to Disney World many times and it's a great place to be. So how was it during that unique experience of being in a bubble for the NBA action this summer?
It felt surreal. And even thinking back on it now, it feels surreal. You know, I think the best part of it, which I kind of anticipated going in, was just being one of the select few who was there. There wasn't very many people, and there's even fewer members of the media who were there. So like you said, probably and hopefully never have this experience ever again. So truly a once in a lifetime opportunity. And from, you know, a career standpoint, to be involved in something that we're going to be talking about forever and to be able to share with people like you my experience, I think is pretty cool.
For sure.
And what I didn't know as much, but I felt pretty quickly, was we were there because of the pandemic, obviously, right? And they were trying to keep everybody safe. But I think what happened at a very rapid pace was things became magnified that weren't necessarily about the pandemic very quickly. I think there was a sense of maybe guilt from a lot of people that we were truly in the safest place on the planet. There was no virus where we were. It was remarkable. We felt incredibly safe. But because of that, what was going on in the real world, and not even about the pandemic, but the social justice issues, the political climate, the racial unrest in our country, was all being magnified with the people in the bubble because we couldn't do anything about it, we felt, on the outside. And what was crazy was it was like the perfect storm of all of these things that happened or were happening in the world that allowed for the things that I did in my job to become so different. Sure. And things were already different, right? Because of the social distance, with wearing a mask, with how much contact I could have with players and coaches, living in the same hotel room for 82 straight days. But then the questions and the topics and the conversations we were having in the bubble were very little about actual basketball. It was remarkable. And it actually felt really good. It felt really human.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
And I really appreciated a lot of that. And I felt very fortunate that I was the one that got to ask those questions to guys like LeBron and Chris Paul and Damian Lillard and Jamal Murray and on and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely the best part. The worst part was being isolated and being away from home and having that guilt of, oh my goodness, you know, I'm safe. How's my wife doing? How's the rest of my family? How are my friends? And the other part that sucked too was, you know, no fans. And
of course.
And that's really what, as fun as it was to watch on TV, having no fans in the building really sucked the life out of the and took the energy away from a lot of the games that you at home probably appreciated to a greater level than I did being there courtside.
Mm-hmm. I can see that, Jared. That makes a lot of sense. You know, watching on a TV, I mean, it was still incredibly exciting. We had some great moments down there, but mm-hmm. You know, I can tell, you know, sometimes when they have those synthetic crowd noises coming in through the TV, you know, those sounds from the 2K crowds and things like that, you can tell it wasn't quite the same experience that we're accustomed to getting on a night-to-night basis. So, you know, it's very interesting to hear that. And, you know, with the issues that are going on in our world today, I'm sure that, you know, the conversations are great to have. But at the same time, I'm sure that there's moments where it kind of weighed a little bit more heavily on you guys. I mean, there's always something going on in our lives. But, you know, just having that go on simultaneously with the NBA. So, you know, you're trying to do your job. You know, you're trying to bring this coverage of the league while simultaneously – you know, dealing with things outside of it, I'm sure was a lot of pressure, but you know, seeing how it all worked out, I'm very happy to see that everybody pulled together to make it all happen. And, you know, I know you guys sacrificed down there. I mean, that's a long time to spend at one place. And regardless if it's Disney World, if it's California, if it's Vegas, like that's a long time to spend in any one place, regardless of the services you have.
And I'll add that, you know, you keep on referencing Disney World and I guess technically we were on the property of Disney World, but none of us ever got to see the theme parks or the rides.
You're not Space Mountain or any of those crazy
attractions. Nothing. We didn't. You know, there was some talk initially that maybe they would find a way to shut down the park, sanitize it, and be able to get us in there. But they never logistically were able to figure out how to do any of that. So no, I mean, we were either at our hotel room or we were at the ESPN Wide World of Sports, which was about a 10-minute drive from the campus where the hotels were that we were at. So it definitely, you know, I guess technically we were on the property of Disney World, but at no time did it ever feel like we were at the most magical place on earth.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes total sense. You weren't inside the park. You weren't getting the full experience.
No.
Kind of like, you know, I was there, but I wasn't really there, you know?
Right. It's kind of different. Although the only cool thing was, and I probably had about 17,000 too many of them, is that we have these Mickey Mouse ice cream sandwiches available to us every day. So that was the feeling. I had way too many of those.
I'm sure it didn't help out with the diet plan.
No,
a little bit. But something else that I've heard about people talking about that, well, while in the bubble and their experience, and especially from the player's perspective, is the mental health aspect of everything. Kevin Love, DeMar DeRozan, several players have come out recently over the past, you know, couple years or so, and really just harped on the importance of keeping your mind in a good place, because that's as important, if not more important, than keeping your body in good shape. So how did you feel coming out of that experience from a mental perspective? Did you feel like, you know, mentally you're just kind of shot? You know, was it a, you know, what did it weigh heavily on you, you know, aside from the physical toll that it took on you? Could you speak to that a little bit? Because I've heard a lot of people talk about that from teams, you know, all the way down, you know, all the way across everybody that was helping to make that whole bubble experience possible.
Yeah. And I think the NBA really tried to do a really good job of addressing this while we were in the bubble. So let me just take you through some of the things that happened in the bubble. Each morning when you woke up, before you left your hotel room, you had to fill out a survey on an app, on a special app that was on your phone. Mm-hmm. And among the things you had to do was take your temperature, which was done via Bluetooth. So you couldn't fudge it. I couldn't just write, I have 98.6, like whatever my temperature was, the NBA would find out. We had an oxygen reader on our fingers. And then we had a list of other questions we had to answer. And the last question they would ask every day is, do you wish to speak to a mental health specialist or something like that? And if you clicked yes, within the next couple of hours, you would receive on your cell phone a call from a therapist. And they had not only therapists on site in the bubble, but also people off site that who would be able to contact you by way of phone if you needed it. So that was something that the NBA took very seriously. You know, I think that they realized, even though, listen, I would do it again in a heartbeat. It was a tremendous career experience for me. But being in a quote-unquote bubble, being isolated, is hard. And also, I go back to, you know, we're receiving the best care in the world. As my wife and I discussed, you know, the risk of going in, we didn't realize how safe it would be. But we came to the conclusion that, God forbid, something would happen. Being there with the NBA's medical team, and all of the, I knew about a lot of the extremes that they went to, that should something happen, what the plan was. I had a lot of Zoom calls and all this stuff ahead of time. Mm-hmm. I felt really good about it. I felt like I was in good hands. And there is that sense of guilt that you have that, oh my goodness, if I get it while I'm here versus if my wife gets it while she's back at home in Atlanta, she's in a lot more trouble than I am, right? So you have that grief. And then on top of, you know, all the stuff that was going on in the world, like there were still protests going on. It was, you know, the presidential election cycle was really heating up. There was a lot of tension in our country. There still is. And wondering if we were better off there. And I kept on trying to reconcile with myself, and I think with players that I talked to, that I felt like, you know, there was a period of about 15 days or so, I could be off, but where I was on TNT for like 12 of those 15 nights doing, you know, so thankful for doing the biggest games of the playoffs and of that, you know, before the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be sticking a microphone in the face of LeBron, or like I said, all these guys, and not talking about basketball, I think, you know, there was a couple of moments in the bubble where I had guys just kind of get into things with me that I never expected. Like, you know, LeBron went really deep. He did his first interview with me, you know, when the bubble started. And it was just, we really didn't talk about basketball. We talked about the purpose of being here and what it means to the rest of the world. And Paul George talked about fighting depression with me, and Jamal Murray cried. He just absolutely lost it. And I didn't see any of that coming with any of those guys. Mm-hmm. And, that was a lot of the mental health strain that even if we were in quote unquote normal times where we weren't in the bubble and I was just flying to Utah or flying to LA or flying to wherever to do a playoff game, I don't know if the same emotion would have come out even with the same circumstances going on around the country. I think
right.
The lifestyle we were living got to people. And I certainly felt that, you know, on a lighter note too, it also was kind of strange for me leaving the bubble, talking, you know, knowing how safe it was in the bubble, but we still wore masks every day. We still socially distant. And obviously I was tested every day. It was strange to come home to Atlanta and go to like a grocery store and have to really think in my mind, like get it set in my head that I've not been tested now in a couple of days or a couple of weeks, you know, and I have no idea about the people around me. I have no idea if they've got the virus. You know what I mean? Yeah. So like, it was just a really weird, like kind of mental reset of like, all right, here's how you have to approach life now.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure it was a 180 for you because you're so used to having this routine. That's the other thing. I'm sure you got into a routine every single day. You did the testing on the app. You got prepared. You went to the arena. You came back. And then you go back into quote unquote normal life. And it's just like, well, what do I do now? The routine is just kind of thrown out of whack.
Totally.
Yeah, I totally get that. So, I mean, you guys did a lot of special changes. The league brought about some changes in the bubble that we hadn't seen before to some of the camera angles during the game, to the format of interviews, you know, the socially distanced interviews, the benches being socially distanced, things like that, that were kind of like first time introductions for the, you know, the fan experience and for you guys on the court. Are there any changes that you saw or experienced during the bubble that you would like to see the league continue to kind of push forward, whether it's for a safety measure or just to enhance the fan experience, like anything that is in place maybe right now that was adopted or something that they haven't introduced yet that you would like to see the league bring forward in the coming years?
Well, it's funny. At first, I hated and it was tough to adjust to the at least 6 feet between me and the coach or player that I was interviewing. Mm-hmm. First, because it was just hard for us to hear each other, even with no fans in the building. But then I learned quickly to appreciate it was the first time I wasn't getting sweat on by a player, like after a game, you know, like,
yeah,
you have no idea how many times after an interview. I remember last year I interviewed Luka Doncic after the day after Christmas. He had come back after an ankle injury, and I'm in Dallas doing a game against San Antonio, and I interviewed Luka after the game. And, you know, because it's so loud, I had to get so close to him. You know, you think about how gross it was. He was so sweaty that it was just, it just dripped all on me. And I was like, oh, you know. And then now you're 6 feet away from guys, so you don't have to deal with that. So that was actually a benefit. But in all seriousness, like, I love the rail cam. Like, I think that was a great added bonus for the fans to see that view from, you know, baseline to baseline of that rail cam.
Sure,
yeah. I don't know how logistically possible it is, because once we get back, hopefully, to fans in the stands, where do you put that?
Yeah, true.
The other thing, too, that I've really, really loved, and I think we're going to have it moving forward, and it's such a small thing, but it makes such a huge difference, is the referees speaking into a microphone to explain calls. I think that that added such a cool element. It was kind of an unintended consequence. They did that initially because the referees wouldn't be able to go to the broadcast table and tell the broadcasters what the call was directly. So this was the workaround for that. And the workaround is now better than anything, because the referee is now speaking right to the audience or the viewer at home. So I think, right. I think that was a really, really cool thing that was added, and I hope remains.
Definitely. Like, I'm a fan of that too, because as fans at home, you know, we hear the call, or we hear, or we think it's the call on the court. Sometimes we're not entirely sure what that is. So we're just kind of waiting for the announcers to get the word of it and then relay the message to us.
Right.
So now we kind of cut out that middleman, so to speak, and the refs are delivering the message straight to the fans. And it's just like, instantly we know what's going on. So I know, I'm sure I speak for a lot of fans when I say that we feel more connected. We feel like we're more a part of the experience when we're spoken directly to. So I'm with you. That's a great addition. Right. Absolutely. And the camera angle too. I mean, it's just another dynamic part of the game, but I have heard another side of it. And I've talked about this on prior podcasts. Some people that watch the game very intently, like some people that are watching it for, you know, a film room purpose, like they want to digest the game play by play, action by action. And sometimes they feel like when they're at that angle, they don't get they can't see the whole court. So things are blocked a little bit. So that's one part of it but you got to think that's probably a very small audience, a very small subset of the fans in general.
Well, so it's funny you mentioned that, because typically each team, after every game they play, gets a copy of the broadcast. So if we do a game on TNT, right away they have downloaded onto their laptops a copy of it, and they watch it. But because of that rail cam, teams quickly realized that they couldn't get the angles you're talking about, you know, kind of like in football, they call it the all 22 angle, where you're seeing the whole field.
Right.
So teams had to adjust, and with the league, they had to get a different view for their game footage, which no longer included the broadcast version of the game. So they didn't get the announcers. So it's actually interesting. You know, there'd be times where I'd say something and I was wondering, you know, would a coach be not like that I said that, or would he have an issue with it? And then, you know, I'd go up and maybe talk to him before his next game, and he goes, oh, don't worry about it. I didn't even hear. We don't watch the broadcast anymore because we have to watch this other alternate angle, because the rail cam, you're right, really messed with their scouting.
Well, that's really interesting. That is definitely interesting. And, you know, speaking to that a little bit more, I watch a lot of people on Twitter that actually say they mute the broadcast, like they don't want to get caught up in like some of the backstories that the announcers are going through. So they want an alternate stream. So, I mean, that's just something that just kind of catches my attention. Yeah. Like, some of us do want like an alternate, like non-announcer stream, so to speak. So like maybe that's something that could come to the fan base, or
maybe,
you know, maybe they keep it exclusive. I'd be interested to see what they do with that. It's definitely a cool idea. Last point on this life in the bubble here with you. Do you feel like now we're moving forward a little bit into the present now. So that was kind of like the past, and now we're kind of dealing with like the ramifications of what we went through in the bubble. So do you feel like going forward this season, not going back to that format, you know, going back to the arenas, going try to have some semblance of normal NBA play again, you know, did you have any reservations about going back to arenas and doing things
in person again? Like, you know, is this the best move for the league overall? Like, I've heard from a lot of players and they say they would never want to do that again. You know, that was just a brutal stretch of just being in one place for one time. So, you know, going forward for this season and beyond, like, you know, are you just kind of ready to be done with that whole bubble experience and just move forward with quote unquote normal play again, at least from a broadcasting perspective?
I have really mixed feelings on this, Aaron. I think it's a fascinating topic because the first thing that comes to mind when you bring all that up is I'm nervous about this season. Particularly, listen, I was nervous going into the bubble, right? Mm-hmm. But having that 3-month experience and seeing how safe it was and how successful it was, if I was a gambling man, I would put my money on a bubble getting us through the season, mm-hmm. more so than what we're about to venture into.
Right.
I worry that there's going to be significant stoppages or delays. And the other part of it, which I think we just kind of skim over these days, is I worry about the health of people involved.
Yeah.
Right. I don't want somebody to get very sick or lose their life because they were in some form involved in an NBA game, from a player to a coach to an arena person to a janitor, whatever it is. I don't want that to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm very nervous about that. But I think you brought up some things. It comes down to two things. And we figured this out pretty quickly while we were in the bubble. Number one, as you said, you're spot on. There is almost no chance the players union was going to go back to a bubble. Mm-hmm. No chance. Wasn't going to happen. Right. And then number two, which is really number one, because as much as we want to talk about health and safety and make that a priority, and I'm not trying to diminish what the NBA has done and is doing, because I truly believe they do care about that stuff. But what supersedes all of that is money.
Yep.
And while the bubble ended up being a success and ended up making the NBA money, it cost way too much money to operate.
Yeah.
Especially at that scale. Maybe there's a different scale that we could do it at that would look much different and feel much different, but we could never replicate that again. The players wouldn't allow it, and it cost too much money. So now the other part of it too is, which is the optimistic view, is that being in arenas, being in NBA arenas, being in home cities for the most part, except for Toronto, allows an easier transition to allowing fans back in whenever that is safe in each individual city. So I'm really torn. I don't feel great about it, but I also didn't feel good about the bubble. And that worked out really well.
Yeah.
I understand that, listen, when it comes down to it, that money is a domino, a trickle down effect where, if we don't play, then ultimately at some point I'm not going to have a job and I'm not going to get paid. Right. So there is a selfish aspect to it. Right.
Yep. Exactly. That's what it comes down to. I mean, money drives everything that we do, and tough choices have to be made, but all things considered, I think this is probably, with everything that's going on, they're probably just going to work through it the best as they can. And we're going to have to keep our fingers crossed. But, I am glad that, we have kind of things a little bit normal again and, back to the arenas and have some fans there. That fan experience has definitely been missed. And the bubble really kind of showed us how important the fans really are to this league, huge part of it. So going into like a little bit more of a lighter note, that was heavy, Jared. I'm sure that you'd like to transition to something else that's,
I need it. It's therapy for me, Aaron. I need it. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So going into your position specifically, so now looking at it from a perspective of you're out of the bubble, you're back in Atlanta, you're back to the studio, you're doing game time, you're going to the sidelines during the games. So for those that are curious, for those that maybe are interested in going into broadcasting or just want to know exactly what happens behind the scenes, what does a typical day look like for you? And does it vary depending on if you're in the studio with NBA TV or if you're on the sidelines prior and following an NBA game?
Yeah, it really is very, very different. And, that's what I love about working at Turner is, you know, and I tell a lot of people who are looking to get interest into this industry, and that's just sports in general, but more specifically media, is you've got to be versatile in what you do. You can have an end goal of what you want to do. Like, you could want to be on the sports side, a general manager of a team or a president of basketball operations of a team. Mm-hmm. But when you think of all the different departments that report to that position, you've got to know a little something about all of that, right? So
Right. Sure,
you want to be involved in scouting. You want to be involved in analytics. You want to be involved in salary cap. You want to be involved in contract negotiation. You know, there's all these different steps. You want to know the game. You want to know how to think like a coach so you can work with a coach, right? There's all these different things. Well, broadcasting is similar. And I, coming up, you know, at different times of my career, had different end goals of what I wanted to do. And ultimately, it led to having my kind of toe in the water of a lot of different areas. So when I got to Turner, they really allowed me to diversify, if you will, my portfolio, you know, and be a studio host, be an update person, be a voiceover person, be a reporter, do play-by-play. So now my two primary jobs, one on the NBA TV side, is to host a show called Crunch Time, which is our version of Red Zone, which is primarily on Wednesdays and Fridays when the most games are on the NBA schedule, where we go on the air and try and keep you up to date of the biggest storylines as they're happening in the NBA that night. You know, there's typically anywhere from 9 to 13 games on a Wednesday or Friday night. So that's a really cool show that I love to do. And I try to start a couple of days ahead of time, but usually my schedule prohibits that. But the morning I wake up and I start digging into as many storylines as I can. I want to know, you know, if there's 10 games, I've got 20 teams to try and get my hands around the latest injury news. Are coaches talking about lineup changes? What's the history between these two teams? Is there any potential milestone that could happen tonight that I need to be aware of? What's the significance of a win or a loss in this game? What are some rumors that are being discussed about possible trades or coaches being fired? Or is there any other type of history where it's a homecoming game for a player? Either he's from that city or he used to play for that team. So I try and get all those storylines down, which takes a really long time, you know, for 10 games, 20 teams. So that's a typical day for me, you know, and I'm talking to my producers and the people who do graphics, and, you know, I'm trying to watch as much TV, listen to podcasts, listen to the radio, read as much as I can. Just get my arms around that night and have a good idea of what's going on there.
Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time consuming, and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it.
For a TNT night, which unfortunately it's not going to be the same to start this season. I'm hoping by the second half of the season, they allow us to get back on the road. For now, we're still going to be in Atlanta. We're going to be calling everything from here. But when I do travel, the way it works is I fly to whatever city the game is in the day before. Mm-hmm. If I have the opportunity that day to, maybe there's a back-to-back they're playing. So, you know, I can try and go to a game in that city that night. But I start for my games. Typically last year, I did Tuesday games on TNT. You know, I don't know this year what it's going to be. We're still waiting on all that. But, you know, because I know it's one game a week, which is what made the bubble so weird for me too, is that I was doing like 3 to 5 games a week as opposed to one game a week. Yeah. I have now a week in advance to get ready for it. So gotcha. I really start digging in. If I'm doing a Tuesday game, probably the Thursday before I start digging in, I make these charts on my computer with each player. And instead of getting my hands around every game on a particular night that's being played, I really try and dig into storylines. Right, for just that night.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the things that I think is so important in this business, Aaron, that it doesn't matter whether you want to go into broadcasting or you want to work in a front office or a coaching staff, is the art of networking and relationship building. And for me, one of the biggest things you can do in getting ready for a national TV game is reach out to people in the cities of the teams you're going to broadcast for. Mm. So I'm on the phone or emailing or texting with PR people, with coaches that I know, with any front office people that I know. And you're just kind of digging through stories. What I really pride myself on doing going into each game is not only being the most prepared I can be, but also delivering the viewer at home something they couldn't get from their couch. Mm-hmm. Giving the viewer something that I got because I'm on the ground covering that game, talking to the newsmakers who were involved in that game. So I may read a newspaper article in the New York Times or the San Francisco Chronicle that may give me an idea for a story, but I don't simply regurgitate that New York Times story. I take that story, I go to the person it is about or the people it is about, and I find a new angle, or I find different perspective, or I look for clarity, or I look for a comment just in general. Because I want to justify Turner putting me on a plane and putting me up in a really nice hotel room to broadcast that game. Right. I want to justify it by finding storylines that you, the basketball junkie at home, were like, oh, wow, that's cool. I didn't know that. Or, you know, I think that's, you know, or I'm entertained by it, whatever it may be.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super interesting to hear. Just like how many different areas you could devote yourself to. I'm sure a lot of people think that you only talk to coaches and the team itself, but no. As you said, you know, relationships are very important. And, you know, something you figure out very fast in the sports business is everybody knows everybody. So, you know, you can't burn bridges. You can't get tunnel vision and think about one audience or like one group. Like you have to keep your eyes open because you never know who you run into and you never know who that person may know. So, I mean, everything is just so interconnected. That's what makes it so cool. It's a huge network.
No question.
People with common interest. And something else you spoke on is that diversification that you really devoted yourself to before you even got into this position. And I think that's something else that a lot of people can take away from this if they're looking towards a career in basketball, whatever it is, as you said, and it applies to a lot of different fields. And it's very important to just keep an open mind because you never know like what's going to come up and what is going to be required of you. So it comes down to like, how do you make yourself more desirable in the eyes of employers and like what you bring to the table? So that's all excellent stuff. And I mean, I could talk all day on this because
me too.
Yeah, it just goes on and on. You know, you learn so much and you meet so many people. So, I mean, that's definitely important to keep in mind. So in your day-to-day routine and going through, as you said, you know, preparing for these games, doing your research, like what are some big adjustments that maybe you or maybe other members of the broadcast crew and NBA TV and NBA TNT, like what are some changes you guys have had to make to, if any, you know, maybe it's the same as it was before, maybe to your preparations or I know you spoke of like the NBA and, you know, a TNT is not going to be at the games specifically, but like anything else that you guys have found yourself doing differently because of our environment compared to before?
Well, I mean, going back to the bubble, like, you know, like I joked about doing interviews, standing 6 feet apart was weird. The other part that was really weird of the bubble, which is going to be the same for now, is, you know, we used to all have, like in the morning of a game, a big breakfast meeting where the play-by-play announcer, the color analyst, the sideline reporter, the producer, the director, and other people who are involved in our crew are all together and we're all talking. Hmm. And then also throughout the course of the game, because our TNT announcers have to be courtside, I could always go up to Kevin Harlan or Marv Albert or Brian Anderson or Ryan Eagle and interact with them, right? Mm-hmm. In the bubble, not to get too overly complicated with this, but I was in a different zone than those announcers were. So because I was allowed on the court and they were not, I could never physically see or be in touch with the guys I was working with. Mm. I never, I did probably 25 games while I was in the bubble, and not one time did I ever see my producer face to face. Like, wow. that never happens in, you know, normal times.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Really is. And so now, you know, we're still trying to figure out how we're going to do these games. For now, I don't know how much reporters on the TNT side are going to be involved in the actual game broadcast. I think we'll be more involved in the pregame and maybe postgame. But again, once we start to travel, which I'm hoping is, you know, the second half of the season, I would imagine, it'll be a lot of the same where, you know, I may just be out there. You know, the way ESPN is doing it is different than the way TNT is doing it so far. Is ESPN sending a reporter to be at the game, and the broadcasters are either in a studio or at their home. So everybody's just trying new things, and it's weird. I mean, the other part of it too is there is a silver lining to all of this, which I'm curious to see how it plays out. Like all of us, similar to how you and I are doing this, you know, kind of face-to-face call now, and the Zoom boom that's happened, you know, since March, that has allowed us to actually, I don't want to say more access, but different access to players and coaches than we ever have before. Sure. When you do a national television broadcast in the NBA, so that's ABC, ESPN, or TNT, or NBA TV, you're contractually obligated to get 10 minutes of an off-the-record conversation with each head coach of each team. They have to sit down with you. So typically, we would go into their office, you know, an hour or 2 hours before the game and just BS with them. Now that's being done over Zoom. But what's also happening is, instead of trying to align up to align schedules where, am I in a city at the right time? Is the player available? Does he have other obligations? I can now do a Zoom interview with player A or coach X whenever. And I could do it from home. You know, a couple of days ago, my company called me and said, hey, we want to do an interview with Doc Rivers and Rudy Gobert, obviously separately. So I'm right where I am now. I'm in my condo in Atlanta. You know, I fired up my ring light. I'm looking into the camera, and I have Doc Rivers. And now we're taping a segment that's going to be on halftime of TNT of a game. And that could be done in pre-COVID times, but it would be a lot more difficult to plan out and set up.
True. That is a huge benefit, I think, just like in all, like a lot of different industries, we're just sending so many people to the offices and, you know, spending so much of just having people in that space. But as you know, we've learned that, you know, teleworking, it does have its advantages. And, you know, hopefully that, you know, going forward, you know, we can kind of carry this over into different industries, and it results in, you know, work from home days. And I think that would do a lot for people's, you know, for the convenience factor, of course, like you're talking about, you know, you can fire up your laptop and you're talking to, you know, a head coach, you're talking to a player instantly, and you have that access without having to devote the funds necessary to get into a place, and, you know, for them, maybe like vice versa. So there's definitely a lot of advantages. And, you know,
and the other aspect of it too, and, you know, I've wondered if I should say this out loud, but I will.
Go for it.
In television, we overanalyze the way we do things. We often want to make them always perfect. And I think we overthink it because the person at home doesn't care as much how it looks or how it sounds. They just want to watch it.
Yeah.
And a year ago, management would say, you're going to do a Zoom call or a video call and put that on air? Hell no. You know, let's just pay the $10,000 it takes to fly you and a camera crew and the lighting and the audio and renting out the hotel room and all that. And now I think we realize that, you know, listen, it should look good. You don't want to make things look awful.
Of course.
But if you have the opportunity to sit down with an NBA player or coach, this way is fine. You know, it doesn't have the perfect lighting. It doesn't have the perfect background. The audio is not as great as it would be, or crisp as it would be if we were in person. But it's accomplishing the same thing. And nobody at home is going to turn away because we're on a Zoom call versus being face to face.
Exactly. The only example I can think of where maybe people were turned off by the whole virtual experience was, I'm sure you remember when we had that, I think it was like, I think it was like a horse competition or something like that.
Right.
And we had like way back in like April or something like that.
Yeah.
People weren't a fan of that at all.
Right. That's something that's very difficult because the camera angles were bad. And,
yeah.
And the other part of that that was weird was everybody had different setups. So it was like,
yeah. It was like these unfair advantages, like, you know, Mike in the gym in his house and someone else out in the cold, you know, in the driveway. I'm just like, that seems like a pretty nice home court advantage.
Right.
If I'd say so myself. But yeah, definitely a lot of advantages to teleworking. I think it's kind of like the consensus here. And, you know, something, this is probably the, you know, the topic I was most excited to talk to you about that I feel like a lot of people would be interested in this. With these changes we've discussed so far with being virtual and, you know, the socially distanced measures that are being introduced. So when it comes to the interviews, the broadcast, the video calls, I think you kind of answered this a little bit prior to my statement here, but like, do you feel like that diminishes the impact of media, of journalism, trying to tell a story, trying to deliver this experience to people? Like, you know, I know you spoke on this before and you said that like the lighting and things like that, the details don't have to be exactly right. I'm sure that, you know, people can kind of let that slide. But when you're trying to convey maybe like a story, like maybe you're talking to LeBron about the social justice movement or, you know, things that are going on, maybe like personal matters or things like that, like a storyline in basketball where it means a lot to somebody. Like, do you feel like some of that can be lost in translation when it's virtual or, you know, it's not in person like we're accustomed to seeing?
Yes, absolutely. And especially from my role as a reporter, as I said to you, what I pride myself on is delivering something from the site of where I am, from the arena. And now that I'm not in the arena, I can't do that. So now it actually takes a lot more work from my end, which is okay. I'm not complaining about that. You know, you got to make a lot more calls. You got to take advantages of your contacts. But it does take away from that aspect. I certainly would not look to do the same stories as a reporter virtually as I would when I'm on site at an arena. Mm-hmm. And I also think, you know, from a play-by-play standpoint, it's just tough. You know, people on Twitter are going to be hard on our play-by-play announcers because they're going to miss things. They're going to mess. It's hard to call a game off of the television monitor. Especially when so many of these guys have been used to, you know, sitting courtside for decades. I think and just the human interaction too, right? Like, I can't tell you how much I've gotten from just showing up at a morning shoot around at a team's practice facility and being there for 10 minutes. You shake a couple hands, you see things that you normally wouldn't see. You talk to people you normally wouldn't get the opportunity to talk to in person. And it just adds to the depth of your reporting. And I think we'll miss out on all that.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I mean, there's pros and cons to all of this. I think it's kind of like what we're getting at, you know, advantages to disadvantages, but hopefully when this is all kind of behind us, we can take the good that has come from this and implement it into what we had before. And so we all end up with a better product overall and a better experience. And that's kind of like my hope, like as we're going forward, that it all kind of like shakes out that way. But one last topic here, Jared, before I let you go, I wanted to talk about this Giannis extension, his Supermax deal that was just signed the other day. You know, it's a huge deal for Giannis. It's a huge deal for the city of Milwaukee. And, you know, I think the big winner, aside from Giannis, aside from that team specifically, are small markets. I mean, it's been talked about for years. You know, they're always in competition with the LAs of the world, the Miamis, the New Yorks, you know, trying to win these players over from markets that have a lot more to offer, maybe in terms of just the city atmosphere, maybe to, you know, the television exposure. You know, people have harped on stars before saying like, well, if you're not in LA, you're not in New York, you're not going to have the same coverage. Well, I think that Giannis has proven, and some of these other guys have proven. I mean, if you're that much of a star, if you're box office to the level of Giannis, it doesn't matter where you play. The cameras will find you. You'll be at his games. You'll be courtside interviewing Giannis. It doesn't matter if he's Milwaukee or Miami. You're going to be there all the same. So, I mean, like, I'm just trying to think, like, what does this mean for the future of small markets? Like, I'm really thinking that it gives a lot of hope to those teams, the Memphises, New Orleans, you know, teams that have stars of their own, John Morant, Zion. So they see that deal. And, of course, it comes down to the player because players have different preferences. Right. but they're saying, like, if we could offer them the money, if we can be there for that player, and granted they make the right decisions along the way, we have hope. We have a possibility of retaining this player past year 5, 6, 7 of their career, you know, hopefully through the almost the entirety of their career. So, you know, what do you think this means for stars in the future and teams trying to retain those stars that may not be in a market that's as hyped up and have the glitz and the glamour of, you know, some of the big time teams, franchises?
So, yeah, I certainly see your point that it provides hope. But without sounding like the Grinch, I think one of the biggest mistakes that franchises in the NBA, particularly small market teams, and hey, you know, the Knicks, the largest market, do this all the time, is try and provide hope to a team, to their fan base. And sure. And hope in the NBA usually falls in two categories, one in cap space and two in high lottery picks. Mm-hmm. And cap space and a lottery pick in its form before a player has never won an NBA championship, has never won a single NBA game. So sure. I think hope in a certain way is a negative, in that it more times than not is false hope. And it is not actually teams and organizations putting a plan or laying the foundation, the groundwork to being a place that people want to play in. Exactly. I think it's a bit painting with a broad brush, because I don't want to have recency bias and say, all right, well, Giannis stayed in Milwaukee, so now this is a good sign for small markets. Let's not forget the reason why this whole thing started was Kevin Durant left OKC, mm-hmm. didn't sign his Supermax. Kawhi told the Spurs he wasn't going to sign a Supermax in San Antonio. Yeah. And Anthony Davis left New Orleans.
Right.
So, yes, this is a good thing, that Giannis is staying. I'm not in any way trying to diminish it. It is great for the city of Milwaukee. It certainly, again, gives hope to other teams that it is possible. But the Bucks did a lot of things for Giannis and for their organization that I would argue the Pelicans never did for Anthony Davis, even though I didn't love how he went. I don't love the way he went about it. You can disagree with how Kawhi went about things in San Antonio. But I would also say some of the decisions that were made in the lead up to Kawhi ultimately asking out and not signing that Supermax could have changed the course of his decision had they been done the way they were done in Milwaukee. So let's give credit to Milwaukee and say, okay, it's not just we're a small market, let's keep these guys. It's all circumstantial and it's all, you know, individual based. So yes, it's a great thing. And it proves, to your point, you can retain those types of players, mm-hmm. but you can't just sit back and say, we've got all this money, you're going to want to stay. Because the one thing that the NBA messed up on, and I think they would admit this, and the Players Association messed up on this too, is that they never thought when they created the Supermax that they would be dealing with players to incentivize them to stay with players who have already made an excess of 100, sometimes $150 million in their career, and that they would have the financial security in the bank already to say, I don't need $200 million. I could take $150 million with LA or
Golden State. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You know, yeah. I mean, that extra $50 or $70 million that I'm making from the Supermax deal is a lot of money, but the NBA and the Players Association thought that that money would keep players. What we're learning, which we should have realized, is that we're still dealing with human beings. And sometimes they want to live in a different city. They want to play with different people. They want to play in a different organization. Their wives or girlfriends or mothers or sons and daughters want to be somewhere else. Sometimes it's about geography. And the money is not as important because people who have already made $150 million have the ability to say, I can forego $70 million.
Yeah, because that's already taken care of. They've fulfilled that part of their career. And as people go along, the priority changes. We see all the time, right. It's about winning. And that's what kind of pushes people away because they see that the team is not making the moves necessary to give that player the best chance to win. And right. I think a recent example that really drives your point home, Jared, is the Porzingis whole ordeal. I mean, they drafted him. and they brought him along, and he showed promise as, you know, perennial all-star, and, you know, this 7'3" just unicorn, you know, the Porzingis god, you know, all those, times of having him on the team were great, but he wanted out because, you know, he saw the organization wasn't making the proper moves. He got frustrated.
It was a mess.
Yeah. And there was that year, I think it was, you know, after his third year or something like that, where he did not make himself available for the media session, you know, after the season. He skipped it entirely. Yeah. And he was just so frustrated. He didn't want to talk about the team anymore. And that's exactly what they're dealing with. And I read an article just today. They took, The Athletic did a survey of front office individuals and, you know, executives and scouts and all these people. And they basically got votes for who are the best and worst executives. It's surprising to me. I didn't think this would happen, but James Dolan did not finish with the worst, the title of worst executive, which it was surprising to me. It's surprising to a lot of people, but he did finish in the bottom five, you know, to be expected. But it's because, you know, the organization, the ownership are not doing the things necessary to retain their stars. You know, you talked about it. The money is great. New York has more money than maybe any other franchise. Right. They have the magic of Madison Square Garden and all these things, but they can never get those free agents to join them, the KDs, the Kyries, because they take one look and they see that the team is not making the moves necessary to win. They haven't been to the playoffs in many years. They have 5 playoff appearances in 20 years, things like that. And they just shy away. They just see the history and it drives them away. So, I mean, that's a great point. And it's really unfortunate for those teams because there is a lot of magic there. And I would like to see them be good again, but it might be a while, you know?
Yo, that's an understatement.
Yeah. At this rate. One last thing here.
Sure.
You know, we talk about the media. You're part of the media. You know, you are, you know, you're a host, you know, you are a reporter. And a lot of times I think that we see that the media are guilty of pushing this narrative that the stars are going to want out. And Joe Vardon posted an article to The Athletic, I think it was yesterday, in the immediate aftermath of Giannis's deal. It was about, well, here are the reasons why Giannis may not be in Milwaukee. I mean, this is after he signed. So it just kind of gets me thinking, like, are the media, and I don't want to talk to you, you know, you specifically or people that you work with, you know, not naming any names, but just in general, do you feel like maybe that the media takes this narrative too far? Like, sure, stars might look elsewhere, but it's almost as though we can't just appreciate their time in that city while they're there. It's almost like we're always looking forward to the next team, the next rumor. And I understand that's their job. They're breaking coverage, but like maybe it's a little bit too much sometimes. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think it's a tough balance. And I've had people come at me for things that I did, especially during the playoffs when I was covering the Bucks Heat series and I was doing sideline and I started to talk about the potential of Giannis leaving and how important this offseason would be. And people on Twitter came at me for doing that. I think it's one of the interesting parts of the NBA that we have now is that a lot of times what happens after the game or off the court becomes more the conversation than the actual game itself. Mm-hmm. I think it's reflected in ratings and popularity and awareness. Sites like The Athletic are doing great. ESPN.com is doing great. But ratings for NBA games are not doing great. Mm-hmm. It's a weird balance that the NBA is so universally known and talked about, but people aren't watching the games.
Yeah.
I think it's a weird balance. And I just think that we, you know, and a lot of what we do is based on what will draw the most people to watch or listen or read. Right. And we have found that things like that, you know, are important. And the other part of it too is, if you read or watch or listen to somebody who you respect, and hopefully you do your own research on why you respect them or why you don't respect them, it's your decision. You understand that most of us are coming up with things to talk about, not out of thin air. Mm-hmm. It's an idea that's born from a conversation with someone. It's information that we've gathered or been provided with. It's not just to sensationalize and make things up. Not to say that doesn't happen in the media, but again, if you stick with credible people who you respect, I think most of us do things based on fact, obviously, that we want to add more perspective to.
That's a great way to put it. That's definitely a great way to put it. I think you guys get a bad flag sometimes, and you know, things happen. I mean, I understand, you know, you got to put the headline out there, got to get eyeballs. And I'm sure that article is, as much as people disagree with it, the whole premise, I'm sure got a lot of views and a lot of people checked it out. So, I mean, doing something right if you get a lot of views, and you know, even though it might ruffle some feathers. So
yeah, I guess so.
Sometimes. But Jared, I want to thank you again so much for coming on, and your time is very appreciated, and your insight has been excellent into the background of the media and broadcasting, and a lot of great facts and things like that, you know, just about the background there. So thanks so much again, and best of luck this season. You know,
things
are different, and I hope you guys can get through this and with no issues, and things just kind of go off without a hitch.
Me too. And Aaron, I want to thank you, man. This has been one of the best conversations about not just the game of basketball, but the business of basketball that I've had in a long time. So awesome. Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it. And good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. For Business Casual Basketball, you guys can find us at BC Basketball 2. That's going to be your Twitter and Instagram. And then our website is going to be bcbasketball.info. So be sure to check us out for some articles, more podcasts, more content coming real soon. But until next time, guys, enjoy the rest of your day, rest of your night. And we'll come back at you with some NBA analysis around the league here on the podcast real soon.